Hello and welcome back to PaleoCast. My name's Dave Marshall and I'm joined by Tom Fletcher, and we are looking at episode 3 of Life on Our Planet. So Tom, can you tell us what this episode is about in 10 seconds? 3, 2, 1, go!
Okay, so episode 3 is about invaders of the land. We pick up the story at the Devonian mass extinction and we go through the fishes, the amphibians and the first of the reptiles, ending in the Permian mass extinction at the end.
Oh, it just tipped over into 11 seconds. I'm sorry.
This is error. A margin of error. This is your fault. You pressed the button wrong.
Do not blame me.
I nailed it.
This is not my doing.
You know what? I'm gonna be positive about this. We're getting closer to 10 seconds. By episode 8, we're gonna nail it.
maybe. So, what were you responsible for in this episode?
So, like the rest of the series, I was the scientific advisor, just making sure that everything was accurate for the models, the builds of the extinct animals, and the behavior and all that kind of thing, but also fact-checking the script, making sure everything's correct in that regard too, and really just setting limits, I suppose, scientific limits to the creativity of the storytellers at Silverback, who, I mean, this is one of the most interesting points in prehistory. It's a wonderful episode. I really like this one.
Yeah, in terms of the scope of the things that happen, I absolutely love it. I can't get over the fact that you open this episode with lichens. Oh,
they're beautiful, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, there was a special technique used to film those, because obviously they're so, so small that to get the focal distance right, it's super difficult. You have to have a really narrow plane to get the focus right. So what they did was they stacked images on top of each other while moving the camera around, so that you've got that incredible detail of these things as you're sort of flying through their miniature world. And it's stunning. I think lichens is the unsung hero, because they're the soil builders. They're the OG soil builders. And it was really important to include them. You know, even if on paper they seem boring, they are actually really important and very beautiful.
And we'll be talking to producer Sophie Lanfear later, all about the decisions that she made as to the scope of the episode, what to include, what not to include. And she goes over a lot of those details as well. And just in general, the evolution of plants, the evolution of forests, the tree-volution. Very good.
Tree-volution's a good word. I like that.
Tree-volution.
Yeah. Yeah, you need to copyright that immediately.
Yeah. And in this episode, I think we've got the highest proportion of crunchy animals, which makes me so happy. It's a lovely showcase of arthropods, and it probably has the biggest crunch per...
Yeah, the biggest crunch ratio to time. Yeah, I completely agree.
No, I'm talking about the crunchiest animal ever to exist.
Oh, yeah.
Arthroplura probably has the most crunch of any organism on the planet that has ever existed. I'm putting that out there.
I agree. I think you're probably correct there. Yeah.
Because something like a sea scorpion may be bigger and definitely heavier. It's got more meat inside. But in terms of the sheer amount of exoskeleton, Arthroplura every time.
And you'd hear a bigger crunch on land, wouldn't you? Because it's in air rather than under the water. So yeah, I'll give you that one. Like a really big crisp packet.
But it's not just arthropods. There's also a lot of tetrapods. There's a lot of fissurepods.
Yeah. Yeah, the fissurepods, nobody ever really knew the name of that one. So we just called it fissurepod. Of course, behind the scenes, we did. It's Strepsidus. It's a rhizodont fish. But it was easier for everyone just to nickname it fissurepod. So I'll give you that one.
So, yeah, we go over the evolution of vertebrates and tetrapods with Professor Mike Benton. And we'll be expanding all upon what a tetrapod is, what an amphibian is, what a reptile, a synapsid, a sauropsid, all of those terms. And we go over a lot of that evolution, accumulating in the greatest mass extinction of all time.
It's really exciting as well, because I, when I was doing my undergraduate in Bristol, Professor Benton was my tutor. So I was inspired partially to come to Bristol because of the Walking with Dinosaurs series, which he helped with. So it's really nice to come full circle with it and be working on a massive documentary with him as one of the advisors. It's, yeah, surreal.
And amongst all of the fossil reptiles and amphibians, we're also going to be seeing a lot from the modern ones, and also speaking to researcher Ida Mae Jones, who actually made quite an interesting contribution to science.
Yeah, she was, yeah. Are we allowed to talk about that now, or are you speaking to her about it? Because it's incredible. It's really, really interesting.
Nope, you got to wait.
Okay, fine, good. I will not steal her fire.
No. It was a real surprise as well. Like, you watch the scene, okay, Strawberry Dart Forex, watch that scene, see if you notice any small details, because if you do, then you have just spotted something new to science.
Pretty cool, yeah. But before we get onto that, we should probably do what we do before all of these interviews and talk about our personal favorite scenes.
For me, it is a hard one, because, okay, I worked on Arthroplura. I helped with that model, and I want to say that that is my favorite. I really like it. I think it's the best Arthroplura that we've ever seen.
It's a beautiful model. You should be really proud of it.
Thanks. It took a lot of work. I'm glad you like it. But I can't get over, you know, like the scene with the frogs and the dragonflies. There was such comedy in that. And I love dragonflies. I think dragonflies are one of the world's most perfect animals.
Yes, I completely agree. And I don't know if it was on purpose necessarily, but as we were making this, the dragonfly became a bit of a hero, really, because we meet them, you know, back in the Carboniferous with those huge, great big wingspans. In this episode, we're looking at modern ones, and just the beautiful slow motion shots that we get of them are just, yeah, they're stunning. But the dragonfly is really a symbol of survival, because its design has hardly changed in, 300 million years. So it became a bit of a hero of the series in a way.
I love the optimistic predation attempts by those frogs.
Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of comedy in there, and it was demonstrating a point that there is, even though frogs are smaller than the amphibians we have in the main episode, the extinct ones, they are just as passionate about catching insects. I love the way that they sort of like grab their mouths as well. They fling their arms out and they're waving their arms towards their mouth, kind of grappling things towards their mouths.
Yeah, it's the continuation. Okay, the predation attempt, that's ambitious, but it's the commitment to it. It's the continuation. It's, I'm going to see this through all the
absolutely.
Way to the end. I bet once they land, they're there chewing on nothing.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like
yeah.
buying a lottery ticket and then acting like a millionaire, even though you've not won anything.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm buying a boat.
It's so nice to be able to have the natural history alongside the VFX like we do, because it's so important to show modern biodiversity and to show those kinds of things that you can't really get away with when you're doing VFX. That, you know, those frogs leaping into the air and doing barrel rolls and all that kind of stuff to catch dragonflies is bonkers. It's absolutely bonkers, but it's real. And you can't really do that with extinct animals. Even though we know that elephants today can swim, peacocks can fly, you can't really do that kind of thing with extinct animals, because the audience just wouldn't accept it. So it's nice to be able to show quite how crazy modern animals behave sometimes, and to illustrate an evolutionary point especially.
So Tom, what was your favorite scene?
So previously, I think I've chosen natural history sequences. So I'm going to choose a VFX one this time. My absolute favorite one, it will come as no surprise, I imagine, but it's the fish that crawls out onto the land. We know now that there's about 100 different fish alive today that are in some way amphibious. So things like mudfish and lungfish, all that kind of thing, are the obvious ones, but lots of fish do it. And in this particular scene, we have Strepsidus, which is a rhizodont fish, living amongst the roots and twigs of this quite shallow, swampy environment. And it's really special. It's such a cool thing to see when it's using its lobe fin to grapple through that vegetation, because that's probably how lobe fins evolved in the first place. You know, it wasn't to walk around on land straight away. There had to be a middle ground between water and land where these really stout, powerful front fins were useful. And so getting through that tangle of roots was really useful. And there's a little scene, there's a little shot where the lobe fin is just resting on the branch and pushing its way through. And I'm going to be using that in lectures for years to come. And I'm sure other people have talked about this, but the attention to detail of the animators on that was exquisite. We got the model itself is beautiful. Per Alberg helped with that enormously. And that looks beautiful. Again, we started with the skin first and then worked inwards. And it's a really charismatic little animal, and the attention to detail of things like the sand moving out of the way of its fins and all that kind of thing really embeds it in that world. And yeah, for me, that's an absolute highlight of the series, in fact.
Am I right in thinking that there's fish today that are obligate air breathers?
Apart from us? I'm not sure. You're right. So there are labyrinth fishes. So things like Siamese fighter fish and gouramis. And I think I'm right in saying that they have to come to the surface to breathe in their particular environments, which are quite stagnant and there's not very much dissolved oxygen in the water. Probably the best example though is the electric eel, which if you held it underwater, it would drown. So yeah, they are obligate.
Well, Tom, I hope you and indeed all of our audience enjoy these interviews on episode 3, and I will see you again, hopefully, at the start of episode 4.
Episode 3 is an absolute corker. It's been a pleasure, Dave. Thank you.